from Radio Vermont, it's the Dave Graham Show on WDEV. It's your show about the people, places, and the issues that matter the most to you. Now here's your host, Dave Graham.
Good morning, Vermont. It is Tuesday, March the 3rd, 2020, town meeting day and Super Tuesday. And we are in a... little bit of a technical quandary right there. I think we just got straightened out and we're set to go here on the Dave Graham Show on WDEV FM and AM. And we are going to be talking about town meeting today and a little bit about Super Tuesday. My town meeting guests will include later on a team of students from the University of Vermont as well as a couple of their teachers. They are going to be talking to us about their plans to fan out along around town meetings across Vermont and learn all about this venerable institution in our state and also how to cover it as budding journalists. And so that'll be an interesting conversation in the second hour. A little bit later in this first hour, we're going to be talking with Caitlin Hollister. She's the chair of the school board in the Harwood Union School District, which has been roiled by controversy ever since Act 46 passed, and even, I guess, somewhat before then. They're going through some shrinking pains, thinking about closing one of the elementary schools in the district, and so we'll be hearing some about that in the latter part of this hour. But first, I wanted to bring in a very special guest, someone who has been the town moderator in Middlebury. I believe he has retired from that position now. We'll find out for sure in just a moment. He was the town moderator in Middlebury for decades, and he also happens to have served as the Secretary of State for the state of Vermont, the state treasurer, and governor last decade in the aughts, I guess, from 2002 through 2010. My guest, of course, is Jim Douglas. Good morning, Governor.
Well, Dave, great to be with you. Glad you got the technological issues resolved. And, of course, every Tuesday on your show is Super Tuesday, right?
Yeah,
and then we have Super Wednesday and Super Thursday follows. Yeah, it works out really well that way. So, I really appreciate you joining me because I wanted to, I was thinking to myself, who am I going to get I haven't had on before to talk about town meeting, who's an expert at town meeting and has been to, you know, hundreds of them or something, and can talk to us about this institution in Vermont. And I said, I know, there's a guy over there in Middlebury. Jim Douglas is, how long were you the town moderator in Middlebury?
33 years, and you're correct, I am retired. I'm enjoying my pension.
Yeah, but that followed the big salary, right?
Yeah, but interestingly, Dave, I retained the school district moderator responsibility. We had that meeting last week here because we're having, as you alluded to in other districts, a little stress over lower enrollment and potential consolidation. And so I thought I'd kind of hang on there until things settle down a little bit. But that's the reality many of our communities are facing.
Yeah, in fact, I had someone who lives in that school district. Joanna Doria from Ripton was my guest yesterday, sort of representing, you know, someone at the concerned parent end of this whole discussion that's been going on around Vermont in recent times. You know, every time we hear of a school district possibly or merged, unified, union, whatever they're called these days.
Yeah.
Talking about closing a school, then a whole bunch of parents get up and say, oh, no, you can't close our school. We want to keep our school open. And it is a tough thing. I mean, these small towns where, you know, sometimes the school lunchroom is the biggest industry in town. You know, it's a really, really difficult thing. And I think people have a reasonable suspicion it'll hurt real estate values to say, oh, you're thinking about moving to Exton, whatever.
Right.
It doesn't have a school, by the way. Got to bus your kids.
It is a fair concern. Middlebury consolidated its district a couple of years ago, and that went smoothly because it's coterminous with our old Union High School district. But over the next couple of years, the rubber will meet the road because of declining enrollment and the infrastructure needs of some of our small elementary schools around here are quite substantial. So the board, not this year, but in the next year or two, will have to make some very difficult decisions.
Yeah, and that is when it's going to be even more frankly controversial than things have been recently. As you put it, the rubber hits the road. That's when things really will heat up, and you'll probably see some public forums over there that are going to be difficult for a lot of folks. And I tell you, I feel for the school board members around Vermont. I mean, they are working long hours without much pay at all. You know, a couple thousand bucks a year typically, if that. And they are making these hard decisions and taking a lot of heat, frankly. They feel the squeeze from Montpelier, and then they have to face the angry parents typically in a school board meeting in many instances.
Well, I talked with a voter in one of our other towns with a declining enrollment, Weybridge, this past week, and she's an elderly widow, and she said, you know, I'm torn. I hate to see the school disappear, but as a taxpayer, I have to confront reality. So that's the challenge the boards are facing, as you say, and we're really all facing as residents of our communities. And there's no wrong or right answer, but it's going to have to be a good conversation in the next few years. And our meeting last week here was very respectful, better attended than many school district meetings. Mm-hmm. People had some strong feelings, but I was pleased that everyone was civil and respectful, and that's the kind of meetings we hope we'll have in the years to come.
Yeah, yeah. Now, let's talk about the impact of Act 46 on town meetings, because you know, I was hearing from some people yesterday that there's a lot of concern out there that with more of the power sort of centralized into a regional school board, there's going to be, frankly, less reason for people to go to their town meetings if they're not going to be voting, on important local school issues as much anymore. Is that a concern of yours?
Well, that's really the issue that we've been seeing for generations now with the greater use of the Australian ballot. And sometimes that has caused a decline in the attendance at traditional meetings because, as you point out, there's an opportunity to discuss but not actually decide on some things. But, as I said at our school district meeting here last week, the attendance was quite strong because that's the opportunity that people have to come together and voice their concerns about the future of local schools to their board. So I guess I go back to something I've been saying for decades, Dave, which is people will show up if there's something interesting and or controversial to talk about.
Yep.
So I think we'll still see good participation.
Well, for those who love town meeting just as an institution and a real example of kind of purest democracy left in America, in some ways, I think that's an encouraging word. So there you go. I know, you know, among the other difficulties town meeting faces is that it used to be, when attendance was stronger, you had many, many more people actually living and working in the same community. Oftentimes it was farmers who would basically get the chores done early and head down to the school or the town hall for the annual meeting, and then but these days, our declining numbers of farmers and the economy changing and many, many more people commuting to work away from the communities where they live, it becomes more difficult to get to town meeting, doesn't it?
Well, it does. And that's why the Australian ballot has been used more and more. And I don't think that's necessarily bad, because it gives more people an opportunity to cast their votes. And I've always said that that's a decision for communities to make on their own. And no answer is particularly right for any particular community. But you're right about the patterns of employment. More people work out of town. I worked 50 miles from home for quite a few years.
That's right. Yep.
And more people are commuting. You mentioned farmers, and I recall during the 80s when I was Secretary of State, a hearing about the East Montpelier town meeting one year when somebody rushed in and said, "Quick, everybody come help. Harry's cows are out."
Oh, jeez.
So,
yeah.
Yep. So, yeah. It's a very different environment now. But as town meeting evolves, I hope and believe it can still be attractive to folks to come and participate. But I guess the new generation of Frank Bryan scholars you're going to be talking with later will educate us on that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to our team of young, as you put it, scholars and journalists who are going to be out there covering their first town meetings as budding journalists. And I gather that some of these young folks are from Vermont. They may have grown up going to town meetings with their folks or whatever. So we'll find out a little bit more about that in the second hour of today's program. One of the things that I've always, you know, sort of that people have understood about town meeting is that it's a great opportunity not just to participate in government and this exercise in democracy and all that, but there's also a social aspect to it. And I'm wondering, does Middlebury have a big lunch tradition there?
No, our meeting is Monday night, and for a few years, the manager and selectman arranged a sort of reception, alcohol-free, of course, in advance of the meeting, where there were displays of various things, and you have an opportunity for an hour before the meeting began to talk with folks. But I'm not sure that's happening every year. We tried, as the law allows, going to a Saturday meeting for a three-year trial period some time ago. And frankly, attendance was about the same. A little different crowd. The thought was there wasn't the pressure of adjourning because it was getting late in the evening. But the total numbers really weren't appreciably different, so we went back to Monday night. But there again, the law allows meetings to be held on the Saturday before or Monday night or Tuesday during the day, whatever is best for that particular community.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned the pressure to adjourn as it gets late in the evening. I gather that without that pressure, town meetings can go on for quite a while. Do you have any sense of what the record was during your 33 years?
Well, I don't recall. We certainly we moved the starting time from 7:30 to 7 a few years back, so I'm not sure that was necessarily good because, you know, sometimes people just want to fill the time. But I think actually it did help. And there comes a point where folks start to drift out, and that's kind of a sign that maybe we ought to be more expeditious. But what I've seen, Dave, is fewer paper ballots for that reason during our evening meeting, because that takes a while, you know, to set up a ballot box and have people circle through. And so a lot fewer of those as a result of being there in the evening. But the record, I can't remember, but pretty late.
Yeah. Has it ever gone after midnight?
Rarely. That's kind of a, you know, pretty good witching hour to make sure it wraps up. So I don't recall much after that.
Yeah. I think that the town meetings on the Tuesday mornings, you know, where it's not a holiday, it is for state workers, but not for most other folks in Vermont, it really becomes difficult. And that's why you see, I do note that a lot of communities now are moving to, you know, Monday evening, Tuesday evening, Saturday during the day, trying to figure out a time to accommodate people's work schedules, basically. And the conversation that we started talking about the school, though, I wanted to double back on something, because you mentioned the demographics and the declining student bodies. I remember way back in the single digit years at the start of this century, there was a certain governor who got up at in a state of the state or an inaugural address, I think, and was talking about the fact that our student populations in Vermont had been declining for years, and we were down like 20% from their peak. And we were still, and yet costs were still growing, and this can't last. Basically, was the message, if I recall that correctly. I think you could correct me if I'm wrong there. And I'm just wondering, you know, every now and then I get a glimpse of what the fundamental problem is here. And I was talking to somebody just in the past couple of days, a young woman, late 20s, I guess, who. She made this offhand remark that really struck home with me, which was, nobody's having babies anymore because people can't afford it.
Yeah. Well, I think that's right. I do recall many times expressing concern about the trend and the decline in our school population. Interestingly, when I first sought the job back in 2002, I met with some folks from the university and state colleges who offered projections on school-age population, and they showed that they would bottom out in 2017 and then begin to rise. Well, of course, that didn't happen, and now it's going to be 2030 at the earliest, based on our current projections, and perhaps even later. So it's more serious than we believed roughly 20 years ago. And I think you're right. I talked about the affordability crisis. Governor Scott has talked about it. It's real. This is not just rhetoric. This is an expensive place to live. And you probably saw that report in The Economist magazine a couple weeks ago, done by the Bank of England, that was very unflattering. It said Vermont's the only state that's got it wrong in terms of affordability, and they talked about how housing in Burlington is as expensive as that in Seattle. We've got to take this more seriously, and I hope the folks under the dome are someday soon going to get that message.
I wanted to cover a couple other things with you, Governor Douglas, because we don't get you on the Dave Graham Show very often, so it's a great opportunity. Of course, today's Super Tuesday, and so I wanted to check in with you about a couple things related to that. One is, of course, we have a certain junior senator from Vermont who is very much in the mix in the Democratic primary. Four years ago, Bernie Sanders got 86% of the vote in Vermont against Hillary Clinton. Do you think he can match that or top that this year, or is he gonna slip a bit?
Well, there are more names on the ballot, as he's pointed out. When it's one-on-one, it's perhaps a little easier. So it may not be quite that stratospheric, but I think the latest polls show that he has a very comfortable lead in his home state. What happens elsewhere? Well, I still think he's going to have a pretty good night.
What do you make of that home state favorability or whatever toward this senator? I mean, is that an important recommendation of any kind, or is that just sort of Homerism, or what is that?
Well, I think it does help. The latest poll had him leading Senator Warren in her home state, interestingly, by a whisker. So we'll see what happens there. But, some of those national polls have shown Bernie the most popular senator among his own constituents. But, as you know, Vermont always supports incumbents, which has been good for those of us who were at the time. Mm-hmm. We have never unseated an elected U.S. senator in our state's history.
Wow.
Right once, as you know. We always like our incumbents, and we let them stay basically as long as they want. That's also why we have the distinction of being the only state never to send a woman to Congress, which I hope will be remedied at some point in the not too distant future. So, yeah, I think we kind of like our home state folks. Howard Dean won only one primary in 2004. It was Vermont. So we like to support our local folks.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's I pointed out recently on this program a little bit of Homerism, or at least regionalism or something in New Hampshire. The New Hampshire primary, if you look at some of the history there, it's fascinating to me how often being a candidate from New England really gives you an advantage there, you know, and we've seen candidates who win the New Hampshire primary and then go on to fizzle. Songus, Ed Muskie, I think Henry Cabot Lodge won the Republican presidential primary back in 1960 and probably disappeared from the scene. So, it is kind of I've joked that maybe, you know, one of the things you have to do in win New Hampshire primary is be a Red Sox fan. That's the important qualification for somebody imagining you as president, I guess. One other thing I wanted to ask you about related to Super Tuesday and the primaries in general. Fox News had a really interesting story this morning talking about how in many states that are voting on Super Tuesday, people have voted early. And this has been a real trend in recent years where there's been a push on to try to increase participation in voting by getting, you know, saying to people, you're going to be working Tuesday, no problem. Come by a week or 2 weeks ahead of time or whatever. And now there's a lot of buyer's remorse from Buttigieg and Klobuchar, et cetera, voters in some of those Super Tuesday states, isn't there?
There is, and to be honest, Dave, I may run against the grain on this, but I have never liked early voting because, well, for these reasons. The election should be a simultaneous decision by an electorate as to who ought to hold a particular office, and voting early means that you may be voting for somebody who's no longer in the race, or you may have information come forth later that causes you to change your mind. And one of the examples I've heard of was Paul LePage, who was elected governor of Maine in 2010 in a three-way race. And a number of Maine voters said afterward, gosh, if I'd known he was that bad, I wouldn't have voted for him a month early or whatever it was. I think in the old days, you got an absentee ballot if you were away from your hometown on election day, if you were ill or confined and couldn't get to the polls, but not just because it was convenient. And I think this is a good reason for us to reconsider that very liberal use of the early vote.
Well, that's an interesting perspective there from somebody who's been involved in elective politics in Vermont for a long time, former Governor Jim Douglas, former Secretary of State Jim Douglas, former Treasurer Jim Douglas, longtime Middlebury moderator Jim Douglas, my four guests this past half hour. Thank you very much, sir. It's always good talking with you.
My pleasure, Dave. Have fun.
All righty, we will try. We're going to go to a bottom-of-the-hour break for some CBS News, and we're going to be getting a couple words from our sponsors here on the Dave Graham Show on WDEV, FM, and AM, and more town meeting coverage, maybe some chatter about Super Tuesday when we return here on the Dave Graham Show. Stick with us, folks.
As the winter rolls on, we're on sale upstairs at the Warren Store. All fall winter clothing is 20 and 25% off. Cozy tops, comfy bottoms, warm coats and jackets for men and women. Cool, Prana, Smartwool, Save the Duck, Kari Tra, long underwear. Need a hat? We have Skeeta, Shukas, Papia, and more. Palms and beanies galore. And a large selection of socks from fun to functional, blue cute to darn tough. Spring clothing is arriving, so come on down for the best one-stop shopping in Vermont. The almost world-famous Warren Store, Main Street, Warren Village.
It's the Dave Graham Show on WDEV.
We're back and continuing our coverage on this Town Meeting Super Tuesday or Super Town Meeting Day or whatever you want to call it. I don't know exactly. March 3rd, 2020. We've got a lot going on both locally and nationally in our politics and our democracy. And wanted to bring in somebody who has been very heavily involved in the very local democracy here in the Waterbury to Warren stretch of neck of the woods. That would be the Harwood Unified Union School District. Caitlin Hollister is the chair of the school board there, and the school board in that district has been hearing a lot from the public lately about various ideas that it's been floating for adjusting the size and structure of the school district, and we're going to find out what's on people's minds on town meeting day here in our region. So this, of course, is the home territory for WDEV, since Waterbury, where we're located, is part of the Harwood District. 244-1777 is the number here if you'd like to call in and get your word in edgewise with the chair of the Harwood Unified Union School Board. And Caitlin Hollister, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you, Dave.
Glad to have you in the studio. Now, give us a little, just a general overview of what is on the ballot for folks to be considering today as they vote.
So from the school board, we have two articles today in all six towns. One is our school budget, asking for over $39 million to support our seven campuses next year. And it's also a question about our maintenance reserve fund, putting $1.8 million into that fund this year. So the majority of our board has asked our voters to support that budget, one that we think is the most responsible one for our taxpayers, but even more so, the most responsible one for the kids and what we can do for preserving their programming and growing their opportunities.
So altogether, it's about $41 million in spending, including the maintenance reserve fund, or?
Right. The maintenance reserve fund actually isn't new spending. It's allocating a budget surplus to the maintenance reserve fund. So we're fortunate to have that surplus. We also know that with seven campuses, we have a lot of needs. And so we've been advised, especially by our external auditor, year to have more in that fund. So we've asked to allocate that surplus, $1.8 million, knowing that we also have a bond on the horizon and more needs for our campuses. So we want to be careful custodians right now and then also be planning for the future with some changes we need to make at Harwood, at Crossett Brook, and at Thatcher Brook.
Mm-hmm. The high schools and middle schools, I mean, it's kind of counterintuitive a little bit, I think, just on a surface view where you think about why are we talking about school construction in an age when student body sizes are shrinking, basically.
Sure.
Fewer kids, and we're talking about building schools. I mean, up in South Burlington, they're talking about completely building a whole new middle school and a whole new high school to replace the existing buildings there, as well as an athletic center. $210 million bond issue up there today. As a school board chair, I bet you're not really envying what they have to try to sell to the public up there. Is that fair?
Oh, yeah, that's definitely fair. They're doing a very ambitious project, and I wish them well. I think our project certainly will be much more modest, partly because we do have a very different configuration here, and thankfully we aren't looking at rebuilding a school, but we will be looking at bringing Harwood really up to date for the learning needs of today and making it more energy efficient, dealing with deferred maintenance that's been looming for a long time.
Mm-hmm. To what extent, I'm just wondering, are school security issues changing and adding costs when we think about infrastructure in schools? Because obviously, you know, in this age of school shootings and all the rest of it, I would imagine people are thinking about, you know, different security systems, basically.
Sure. And that's not something I have a lot of expertise in. It certainly is something that already the state and locally we've invested in terms of doing what we can to secure our campuses. And a lot of that also comes to staff training. And so making sure that all of the folks who work in our schools are prepared. It's part of the job that most of them certainly did not foresee when they signed up to be teachers. And we try to do our best to support what's a very hard place to be some days.
Yeah, that's got to be a just kind of a bizarre thing when you think about somebody who is studying to be an English teacher and they want to impart poetry to kids or an art teacher who wants to talk to kids about, you know, French Impressionism or something, and now they've got to talk about, you know, shooter drills or whatever. It's like, yikes, what a culture clash.
Indeed. And I think it's a little bit of a different part of the equation, but what I know about our educators and really educators throughout the state of Vermont is they're really good at building relationships with students. And I'm not saying that can prevent every horrific situation that we've seen around the country by any means. But we also know how important that is on every level for students when they come into a building to feel safe, to feel connected to the adults there, as well as to their peers, to feel like they belong. And I certainly think that that's what our district does well. And regardless of whether a teacher teaches English or physics or pre-K, they come in because they're really good at building those relationships with students and knowing when to intervene when they're concerned about a student, even about something much more mild, but something that can loom large in the life of a child.
I would think we were talking about the infrastructure work needed at the high school, and I want to get a little more detail about that, and as well as the middle schools, but I wondered, is it fair to say that a school, by virtue of the amount of traffic it gets in and out of it every day, I think of when my kids were in high school, and when they would have friends over, you know, just the beating our family room would take at our house, you know, I would think that in a school, there's a lot of opportunities for little dings and nicks on walls and banisters and all the rest of it, and that they probably, it's a higher maintenance environment than is typical. Is that fair?
Indeed. And we have an excellent facility staff who have really kept up our facilities as best as they can. And now what we're looking at are deferred maintenance items that are beyond the scope of our staff, and looking at things like roofing needs, boiler needs, HVAC needs, as well as making our campuses more energy efficient. And certainly there's all that wear and tear that when we go in and renovate, we can also address. We can relocate classrooms to be in better configurations. We can update our science labs, which we know need to be more effective and designed for the learning needs of today.
Yep.
So those are some of the things that we know we want to address as we renovate, as well as offering, you know, perhaps room for our central office to move into our high school. That's something that could be considered, adding a wing to Crossett Brook to allow for more of our middle schoolers to work together and have the space they need for their programming.
Now, do I understand correctly that there was a recent meeting scheduled of the school board that ended up being canceled and that some folks decided to go ahead and have a meeting anyway? Tell us that story. What happened there?
Sure. Thanks. February 19th would have been a typical board meeting for us. And it was a night that we were going to talk about this bond proposal. We were going to hear from our architects. I knew on a logistical level that we were going to be down a few board members that night. And I also knew that really what was looming large for us right now was this budget vote. And we didn't need to address the bond work so immediately. So I made the decision to cancel the meeting. I understand that especially for some of our teachers, mostly at the high school, they felt like that was a lost opportunity for them to voice their concerns to the board.
Mm-hmm.
So
they had gotten pink slips recently, right?
There have been some reductions in force, mm-hmm. and those were communicated in February. It's still an ongoing process. We really won't know the final staffing till about April 1, depending on how things shake out. But we need to give our teachers their contracts and ask for them to sign their contracts in the next month or so. I think some of the reaction was related to the reductions in force and the transfers. And that's certainly something that the board was always willing to listen more to teachers. I regret that the logistical consideration of canceling the meeting coincided with the teachers feeling left out of a conversation. And I do think that there's an opportunity, one that I will own, to repair that damage and be able to communicate more effectively. The high school teachers did choose to host a meeting that night. I believe only about two teachers spoke at that meeting, but other community members were invited to speak and did so, as far as I know.
The high school teachers having their meeting, are they going to be invited back to another meeting with the board in the next few weeks, or is there going to be a makeup meeting for the February 19th meeting, or?
Our next scheduled meeting will be March 11th, and that will be our reorganization when we welcome new board members and elect officers. So can't speculate too much in terms of what the agenda will be. A lot depends on how the votes turn out tonight and what the work is ahead. I would be confident that there will be opportunities. There are always opportunities for teachers to address the board. And if we need to make a formal opportunity available for teachers to address us at length, I imagine that the board would invite them to do so. We haven't made any formal plans, but I can't see why we wouldn't.
This other elephant in the room, I would gather, is this elephant in the district, is this idea of closing the Faceton School, something that the board has talked about. That's not on the ballot this year, right?
Correct. Part of that is due to our Articles of Agreement per Act 46, that the school board really can't take action prior to July 1, 2021. And so at this point, it's still in the long-term plans to consider closure of Faceton, but it hasn't been an immediate board discussion in recent weeks and months. I believe it may be under discussion today in the town of Faceton. So that mm-hmm. is something that the town can also decide to take a vote on. So I expect that will be a big part of the next 12 months, but right now it's not an immediate topic.
Do you expect that there may be some no votes on the budget just as a protest vote kind of thing, or is that not really an issue right now?
I would expect so. I think we always have no votes for a variety of reasons. Some folks don't want to see their taxes go up, understandably.
Mm-hmm.
Some folks aren't happy with different ways that the school board is operating, and we understand that.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, we count the no votes, we count the yes votes, and that's really all we have to go on.
All right. Well, that's what's going to happen today on the Super Tuesday Town Meeting Day here in Vermont. Caitlin Hollister has been my guest. I really appreciate you coming in this morning. It's great talking with you, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate it.
This morning, Steve Dorsey from CBS News is making a Super Tuesday visit to Vermont. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. It's great to be in Vermont.
And where are you in Vermont right now?
I'm in Essex Junction.
Uh-huh.
You know, at the Champlain Expo.
Yep. That's the site of the big Sanders rally coming up later today. Any activity you're seeing there yet, or just it's kind of setup time right now?
It's setup time right now. A lot of press starting to arrive.
Mm-hmm.
Logistics folks trying to telecom stuff.
Oh, yeah.
For an event that we expect to be pretty raucous, because this is his first big rally in Vermont since May.
Yeah, that's quite a long time since we've had a local appearance by our senator, and he does draw a crowd in Vermont. I remember what he announced in 2016 at the Waterfront Park in Burlington on the shores of Lake Champlain. I was still just closing in on the end of my 31-year career with the Associated Press here, and got to cover that event, and it was a beautiful day, a beautiful spring day. Bernie Sanders drew, I think, a crowd of about 5,000 or 6,000 people there to the waterfront, and it was quite an event then back in 2016, and of course we're expecting that a lot of Vermonters will turn out tonight, even though I don't think the weather will be quite as warm as it was on that late May evening a few years ago. But so I honor the bravery of folks who are willing to bundle up and go out there to the Champlain Valley Expo tonight. That's going to be
or vote. You know, it's an important day for local elections, as I've been hearing in Vermont,
mm-hmm.
Especially in places like Burlington, where I've been seeing campaign signs for school board and all sorts of other issues that are going on. But certainly Super Tuesday is really the thing that lots of us in the national field are focused on.
Yeah, that is for sure. I mean, this is a big municipal day here in Vermont. Town meeting day, of course, is a longstanding tradition back to the origins of our state and of other New England states, where folks you know historically gathered every early first Tuesday of March in their town halls or school gymnasia, and they would vote on whether to put a new roof on a school or vote for who should serve as the fence viewer or the weigher of coal. These are important town posts here in Vermont, which are pretty interesting. I wondered also, Steve, are you from this region, by the way? Did you grow up in New England, or where are you from?
I am from Baltimore, Maryland.
Oh, okay. So,
you know, I mean, that's northeast, but I'm sure you guys would consider it south.
yeah.
And no matter how many times I joke with my friends that I'm from the South, because I'm south of the Mason-Dixon line, no one ever buys it. So
yeah, well,
I'm not too far away.
Okay, so but I don't know if they had as much of a town meeting tradition in Maryland as up here. I kind of doubt it. Is that true?
No, definitely not.
Yeah,
no, this
yeah.
is the day if you're doing your elections, you would weigh in on primaries for congressmen and. You know, local officials, but it's nothing that we really celebrate in Maryland. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, I noticed the same thing that they do in Iowa, right? I mean, they really take pride in the caucuses there.
Yep.
This year is a different story with all the problems they had, and who knows what the future in Iowa's caucuses will be, but I don't imagine you guys will have nearly as many problems in a celebrated tradition that seems much more well organized here.
Yeah, it's well practiced. We'll put it that way, and of course the voters in Vermont are expected to turn out pretty strongly for their junior senator today, Bernie Sanders. He got 86% of the vote here in 2016 versus Hillary Clinton. Hard to imagine he's going to do quite that well against a multi-candidate field of competitors. I mean, it's narrowed, but it's still more than really just one as it was then.
Yeah, it's true. However, I think his biggest challenger in Vermont was Pete Buttigieg, and
mm-hmm.
Now with him out of the race, I think the biggest challenger obviously would be Elizabeth Warren from Massachusetts, of course.
Yep.
And you know, I just don't think that she has as much of a pull as Bernie Sanders does in his home state. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him rake in a really impressive share of the votes.
Yeah, 16 delegates at stake here. The sort of open delegates versus the super delegates. Who Vermont super delegates last time, and it looks like this time too will be not necessarily heading in Bernie Sanders' direction. These are the super delegates tend to be the longtime party stalwarts, elected officials.
Yeah,
we have had, of course. An endorsement of Senator Sanders by Congressman Peter Welch, but other than that, Vermont's leading Democrats have been a little cool to our. we've seen the recent remarks by former Governor Peter Shumlin and former Governor Madeleine Cunin, not necessarily all that friendly with someone who came up in Vermont politics, really making a distinction between himself and both the Republican and Democratic parties here. And I remember when I was first covering Bernie Sanders back in the late 80s, he used to refer to the Democrats and the Republicans as Tweedledum and Tweedledee, as in way too similar to one another. I don't know, is that still some of what resonates with some of the Democrats out there who are not keen on Sanders?
Yeah, of course, right? I mean, you've got a lot of supporters for Joe Biden and a lot of supporters for Michael Bloomberg who say Bernie is too radical, that his brand of democratic socialism won't play in states like Pennsylvania or Michigan. But Sanders supporters say it's all a ploy by the Democratic establishment to anoint the people that they have been closest to over the years, and that polls show Sanders performs well in battleground states against President Trump. So, you know, we'll see this play out. It'll be an interesting night for Bernie Sanders because he could show how much of a threat he is to Joe Biden and how much work Joe Biden supporters will have to do to overcome his momentum if he does really well tonight.
I mean, it's kind of interesting the degree to which the field has changed just in the past couple of days, of course, with Joe Biden suddenly appearing as a much stronger candidate than we might have assumed a week ago after the South Carolina performance, and the withdrawal from the race of both Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar. Tom Steyer done with his candidacy, and we're into this situation now where it is really narrowing down, and it may be just essentially Biden and Bloomberg versus Sanders. How does that change the dynamic of, is Sanders still going to be able to lead, or is the fact that we're having some consolidation of in the other parts of the field going to help the moderates, basically?
Well, I think it's really going to help Joe Biden. I think we don't really know how this will affect Michael Bloomberg. He was on WTOP this morning in D.C., another CBS News Radio affiliate, and he said that he doesn't expect to be first tonight in terms of delegates and vote counts, but he's still optimistic. So we don't know how it'll affect his campaign, but Joe Biden's campaign, as you said, has been impressive over the last 24, 48 hours in an unusual way. This is probably the most impressive he's been in terms of brokering power for himself since he began his campaign. And I don't know what he did. I haven't seen an inside account over how this all played out. But now he's really, I guess, pulling out the big guns and trying to make politics work for him.
In other words, you mean piling up the endorsements, for instance?
Yeah, and consolidating power. You know, I mean, getting Pete Buttigieg to fly down to Dallas and endorse him so shortly after ending his own campaign, Amy Klobuchar doing the same shows the kind of gravity that Joe Biden has. And maybe he's trying to show the deals that he can make as a presidential candidate and as a possible president in the White House for voters.
Yeah, I think that there is a, clearly he's got now some momentum going on. So we'll see if it's enough to really hold off and eventually emerge as the victorious going into the convention with the most delegates. It'll be very fascinating to watch. Now, one last thing, which is a lot of voters who voted early for Buttigieg, Klobuchar, are got to be a little disappointed that they voted early now, aren't they?
Yeah, especially folks in California, where Buttigieg was expecting to do well, especially in Hollywood, in Northern California.
Mm-hmm.
Voting day will be key in California here in Super Tuesday because they have the most delegates at stake.
Yep.
And then you've got Texas, where Biden and Sanders are both competing. So it'll be a fun night to watch.
Oh, yeah. Steve Dorsey, CBS News. Enjoy your time in Vermont. Thank you so much for coming on the air with me for a little bit of extended time today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Going to go to the top of the hour. Speaking of CBS News, we're going to hear some of our national CBS News at 10 o'clock. And then we're going to be a couple words from our sponsors. More of the Dave Graham Show to follow. Stay with us, folks.
As the winter rolls on, we're on sale upstairs at the Warren Store. All fall winter clothing is 20 and 25% off. Cozy tops, comfy bottoms, warm coats and jackets for men and women. Cool, Prana, Smartwool, Save the Duck, Kari Tra long underwear. Need a hat? We have Skeeta, Shukas, Papia, and more. Palms and beanies galore. And a large selection of socks from fun to functional, blue cute to darn tough. Spring clothing is arriving, so come on down for the best one-stop shopping in Vermont. The almost world-famous Warren Store, Main Street, Warren Village.
It's the Dave Graham Show on WDEV FM and AM.
We're back, and just been perusing the headlines a little bit. I wanted to mention that over the next 10 or 15 minutes, we've got a little time to take listener calls here and find out what's on your minds out there. We've been having some interesting conversations this morning. Jim Douglas was my first guest, of course, the longtime Middlebury moderator, also happened to serve as governor of Vermont, as well as another senior state positions over the years. And interesting perspective on town meeting from somebody who's been around it for a long, long time. That would be Mr. Douglas, James H. Douglas, to be exact. It's Caitlin Hollister, the chair of the Harwood Unified Union School Board, coming in and following it and talk to us about what's going on in that local school district here, which includes Waterbury as well as the towns down Route 100 all the way to Warren, the Mad River Valley towns. And we... here at WDEV, are really excited to also have a lot of town meeting coverage coming your way today. This evening, for instance, after the terrific basketball game that we just mentioned, we're going to be bringing in a good WDEV team, including Lee Cattell, Joel Najman, Dylan Deloge are going to be leading our coverage this evening. And you'll be hearing as well from folks from CBS News. We just had Steve Dorsey on, one of their reporters they actually sent up here to Vermont, because Vermont's one of the 14 Super Tuesday states today. And so the national press is getting a little bit of a taste of our state today. The CBS folks will be joining us for coverage of the Super Tuesday results nationwide. States all the way from here to from New England, I believe Maine and Massachusetts are joining Vermont in voting today, all the way out to California. I guess California and Texas are the two biggest prizes in terms of the delegates at stake. And so it's going to be well worth watching tonight. Going into, certainly as of last week, just 4 or 5 days ago, Bernie Sanders was expected to be basically doing very well in a wide variety of states around the country, perhaps emerging as the strong delegate leader from Super Tuesday. Things have changed a little bit over the past couple of days, where a couple of the other Democratic candidates have dropped out. Amy Klobuchar, Pete Buttigieg are no longer in the race. And interesting perspective there. Actually, Jim Douglas was talking to us about the fact that there is some danger if you want to vote early because it seems more convenient. You know, I'm going to be working Tuesday, so I'll go in and vote on the Saturday previous, and on Sunday, your favorite candidate whom you just voted for Saturday drops out of the race, and you kind of go, "What do I do now?" Well, the answer is not much, because you can't do a do-over. Anybody who went in on Saturday in Vermont and voted for Pete Buttigieg in the Democratic primary or for Amy Klobuchar essentially is out of luck. Your candidates dropped out over the past couple of days, and your votes now will be recorded just off into the ether, apparently, and not really very impactful. But, you know, that's the way the cookie crumbles sometimes, and that is an interesting perspective, though, and something to think about when you're plotting an early vote. I guess, you know, we have an opportunity to vote weeks in advance of these elections. Maybe there's a second thought to be had about whether going way early is a wise idea. So there you go. Anyway, today, of course, is also town meeting day and Super Tuesday at the same time here in Vermont. So there's a lot of democracy going on. It's kind of an exciting day for certainly anybody who has a habit of covering elections, either as a reporter, as I did for a long, long time, or now as a radio talk show guy. This is an exciting day for me personally, and just watch this all unfold. I think we're going to be in a good situation here. Speaking of good situations, we've got some folks from the University of Vermont going to be joining us in just a couple minutes there. Richard Watts and Lisa Scalotti are two teachers at UVM who are helping to lead students in their in going to town meetings and learning all about how the process works and writing it up as young budding reporters. We're going to maybe get a couple of the students on the phone, as well as I think Richard will be joining us, and find out what those folks are up to. I believe they're going to be joining us on the phone probably right around 10:15 or so. So we got a few minutes here. If anybody wants to check in with us at 244-1777, what's on your mind this town meeting day, Super Tuesday? Anybody out there still unsure about who you're voting for, or were you planning on voting for Pete Buttigieg or Amy Klobuchar, and all of a sudden they're gone, and so you're thinking, well, I got to make a choice between, I guess we still have Elizabeth Warren in the race, Bernie Sanders, Mike Bloomberg, and of course Joe Biden, and so the might change the calculus of people's thinking out there, and we have we're going to be having some, I think, interesting debates and so on among friends and family members today. I bet you there will be some conversations over lunch with people who are saying, all right, I was going to vote for Buttigieg, or I was going to vote for Klobuchar, but they're gone. Now, who am I going to choose? So if you feel like calling us up and letting us know, that's always always a welcome contribution to the program here. Let's see. We do have a listener calling in, Peter from Starksburg. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning. What a wonderful town meeting day this is. Beautiful.
Yep.
The part about the people voting and their people dropping out, that's all part of being first. You got to take the good with the bad. You know, if you want to be the first state or the first caucus or the first whatever, you know, you cast your vote. Hey, that's what it is. If you want to be the decider at the end, put your primary at the end.
Yep. Yeah, I have a good friend who lives over in New Hampshire and was a big supporter of Amy Klobuchar, and was really excited to see that Amy Klobuchar, senator from Minnesota, did as well as she did in the New Hampshire primaries, one of her stronger performances to date. And of course, now is sort of lamenting because Amy Klobuchar has decided she can't carry it on any longer. It's a lot of calculation when you're thinking about continuing with the presidential campaign or not. You got to figure out, is the money still coming in? Am I going to be able to finance organizational staff and so on in the states that are going to be voting upcoming, and all this kind of thing? Doesn't surprise me that these candidates are. I'm frankly more surprised in some cases that they've stayed in as long as they have. So there you go. This is the winnowing, I guess, had to happen at some point, and sure enough, here it is. And so, Peter, were you in a situation where you voted early?
No, I haven't any problem with that part of it, but I almost think they ought to. I know they talked about kind of regionalizing the primaries, and then like having one section, but every fourth year or whatever, you kind of change who's first,
yep,
and stuff, and save this, you know, this all over the place kind of craziness.
Yeah,
and I don't know. I mean, each state has their right, and I'm not going to infringe on that. But it just seems like it'd make a lot more sense if you had, I don't know, quadrants of 10 states, you know, voting in one area at the same time.
Yeah.
And kind of given a thing. This all over the place, and I'm first and you're second and whatever stuff, it just causes confusion as far as I can see.
Yeah, you know, some of our sports leagues have it a little better organized than you think. I mean, like in the NBA, you have the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference, and eventually some East Coast team, you know, ends up scoring off in the finals against a West Coast team, and that's kind of the way that unfolds. Now, I know college basketball is another story where they claim, you know, I see Syracuse listed in the Southwest or some goofy thing, and I go, they're not. That's geographically incorrect, but what are you going to do? Peter, thanks for the call. I really appreciate it. It's good hearing from you, and don't be shy out there. Call again sometime soon. I wanted to introduce my next guests here in the studio with me. I'm so glad to be able to say that I have Richard Watts. He is with the Center for Research on Vermont. It's affiliated with the University of Vermont. And Lisa Scalotti is with the Community News Service. It's sort of an offshoot of the Center for Research in Vermont. The two of them have been organizing students from the university who are going to be traveling around the various town meetings in the state today, learning a bit how town meeting works, learning how to cover town meetings for newspapers and other media outlets. A lot of media outlets, of course, these days are online as opposed to actually printed on paper. But anyway, Richard and Lisa, thank the two of you very much for coming in this morning.
Thank you, Dave.
Good morning.
And Lisa, let me start with you, if I could. And as the two of you talk, I'm hoping you can kind of lean right into the mic because we got to get and can't move the mic around much because it squeaks like crazy. And so it's a lot of challenges and bumps in the road. But that's one of the reasons I love live radio so much. Anyway, Lisa, your role here is actually to sort of coach the students as they go out and go to these meetings. And what are you telling them?
Well, thanks, Dave. It's interesting. This year, our group, it's a new project that we are working with students from a lot of different majors. Some of them are English and political science majors that we would expect to be interested in journalism, but they really come from a bunch of different majors, including like environmental studies, et cetera. And they're learning how to go out and report local news. And what we have set up for today is actually a partnership with a couple different news organizations. And the whole point is to get them working on projects to produce news for real news outlets. This isn't just a classroom thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a partnership today with the Burlington Free Press during the day. We have 10 students, and they are fanning out across Chittenden County. And they're going out to talk to voters. And they're not in Burlington. They're not in South Burlington. They're going out all the way around to as far as Huntington and Bolton and Westford, Milton. And there are some town meetings that are happening in places this morning.
Mm-hmm.
In other places, it's just 7-7 voting. And they expect it to be busy because it's a presidential primary, et cetera. So they're going to be out talking to voters, talking to poll workers, and hearing what's on people's minds. And they're learning about interviewing. They're navigating around places to get them off campus and to go out and see what it's like in these little towns and what it's like to vote in Vermont. And they're going to be collecting stories, just little stories that are going to be fed into the Free Press coverage, which will be online, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at the Burlington Free Press coverage later today, there's going to be, hopefully, little stories from little dispatches from all around Chittenden County, and it's going to be our students that are going to be feeding that into the newspaper's website.
That's a cool project. And Richard Watts, I wonder if you can tell me a little bit about the genesis of it and how did this occur to folks up there? Was this your idea or to whom do you need to give the credit?
Thanks, Dave. No, I think this weaves two threads together, two really important threads. One is town meeting, which is this 200-year-old tradition in Vermont, in which we say that we trust the citizens of a town to make the decisions that affect them. And over time, we've seen some erosion of what's happened at town meeting. And at the same time, on a national and local level, we've seen an erosion of what's happened to our local media. So we have places in this country where you no longer have local coverage. We have something like 1,700 counties in the U.S. that no longer have a local media presence. And so we have two super important things, I think, that are happening here. Democracy, citizen engagement, and our students are able to contribute to that by helping to tell these stories and contribute them to the local community papers.
244-1777 is our call-in number here at WDEV. Lisa Scalotti and Richard Watts, both affiliated with the University of Vermont's the Center for Research on Vermont and the Community News Service are my guests this morning. I think we're going to be hearing from some of your students who may be checking in with us from the field, shall we say, or getting ready to go out into the field this morning and maybe talk to us a little bit about what they expect to hear and see. Richard, are most of the students here, are they going to their first town meetings, or is this a completely rookie experience, or have they maybe did some of them grow up in small Vermont towns going to meetings with their folks, or what do you know about that?
We've been doing this for a few years now. In fact, it traces from a very, very famous political scientist at UVM, Frank Bryan, who devoted his whole career to studying town meeting. In fact, his students, over 30 years, attended 1,500 town meetings. And so for the last 3 or 4 years, we've been gathering a group of students that go to town meeting and report on it the way Frank Bryan would, which is about counting how many people are there and counting how much participation there is and counting the differences in what comes up at the meeting, and also how attendance has changed over time. Lisa and these students are bringing a whole new approach to this. So instead of the metric or measuring that we used to do, we're now trying to tell stories from town meeting. And as far as the students who are involved, many of them don't come from Vermont. And for them, it's just a huge eye-opener. Having done this now for a few years, they just come back blown away by how much people participate and how people get so engaged with debating these issues. And yes, lots of things have happened to undercut town meeting, but in some towns, there is real democracy going on that you can't really see anywhere else in this country, where people are talking about and debating issues face-to-face, disagreeing face-to-face, and having civil discussions. It's, you know, an amazing thing when it works.
Lisa Scalotti, you were years ago a reporter at the Burlington Free Press. I think that's when I first met you, way back in the 90s or something. I was working for the AP, and you were covering the State House for the Free Press. You also, I think, did some local coverage for them as part of your career there, right?
Oh, yeah.
So did you go to some town meetings as a young reporter back in the day?
Many. When I first started the Free Press, it was 1987, and there was still a pretty large local staff that covered the communities pretty closely. So I did cover a lot of the communities in Chittenden County at the time, and then moved on to cover City Hall back mm-hmm. when, at the end of the Sanders years and the beginning of Peter Clavel being mayor.
Yep.
And then to the State House. But yeah, it's also evolved where there used to be more town meetings on town meeting day. Now there's more that happened the night before. I think Richard was at a meeting last night in Hinesburg with hopefully a couple of our students who are covering it for the Hinesburg Record. So we've got a few different partnerships happening with a few different news organizations, and that was one of them too.
Yep.
We had a really interesting presentation this week where an elections official from the city of Burlington came to talk to our students about how the votes are recorded on town meeting night. So this evening we're going to have our students going out to the wards in Burlington to await the results that come from the tabulation machines as soon as the polls are done and the voting is done and the machines are then hit. And she was explaining how these machines are very low tech. They spit out what looks like a cash register tape that mm-hmm. has information on them. And we're explaining to them, and she gave them a really good sort of history lesson about how these things work and how they're collected and then how they're compiled for people to then have results. So they're going to be out there watching this process happen as people finish casting their ballots and then seeing how our machines work, which then sort of dovetails into their concerns. They've been hearing so much about election security and that sort of thing, but they're going to get to see in person how the machines work, what the ballots look like, and how they're recorded. And then help feed some of that information into the composite that happens at the end of the night.
The mechanics and the logistics, election security, of course, is a huge issue nationally. I've had Secretary of State Jim Condos in as a guest on the Dave Graham Show several times now, and he always makes the point that Vermont, of course, always has a paper ballot that it can go back to if it needs to in a pinch and actually count by hand. And he expresses a lot of confidence. And it seems reasonable to me to think that contributes to the confidence that Vermonters should have in the security of our own election system. Of course, the other thing that I think helps with that is that it's very decentralized. In other words, it would be quite difficult to go in and hack essentially every town clerk's office in Vermont if you wanted to alter a statewide result or something here. It would be quite challenging. So a couple of interesting points there. And Richard Watts, I'm just wondering the history of this program. You said it goes back to Frank Bryan, who's now retired from the University of Vermont, right?
Yes, Frank's retired, and he one thing to your earlier question, Frank invented this thing called the Democratic Index, which was a measure of how many people attended and how many people participated. And a couple of years ago, we had a student from Belvedere. He grew up in Belvedere, and Belvedere often ranked in Frank's research as the most democratic town in Vermont. So we were able to send this student and a couple of his friends to Belvedere, and Belvedere again won that title with more than half the voters in town showing up and more than three quarters of those voters during that town meeting having something to say.
Wow, that is quite a record. I mean, that's sort of the classic Norman Rockwell picture of town meeting then of happening still in Belvedere. Is it still a morning meeting on the Tuesday morning of town meeting day?
It is. Mm-hmm. As is, a number of the smaller towns. But, it has to do, like, voting is, in a way, the lowest way you can participate. You go in, you cast your ballot. Town meeting, it's a commitment. It's a couple of hours. But it also is a way to really exercise that civicness of democracy where you're talking and debating. Last night at town meeting in my town, there was a move to raise a budget item. And we had to go to a standing vote. So you have to sort of look face-to-face with your neighbors who you disagree with. Some are standing, some aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you're going to go back and, see them in the grocery store tomorrow.
What was the budget item?
It was to raise additional money for the Hinesburg Community Resource Center, to add $2,000 to this, vital community entity.
Wow. What does the Hinesburg Community Resource Center do? Do you know?
Oh, all kinds of things. All kinds of things I learned last night.
They're a nonprofit, and they do a lot of community service projects in the town. Aren't they the organization that runs the food shelf?
Food shelf, programs for little kids, programs for seniors. But here, the select board came in with a budget, and the voters of the town said that's not enough. And so we debated that for a good 30 minutes.
So they wanted to add more money to the resource center.
And we ended up adding $2,000, so...
Well, and that's one of the things that happens at town meeting. As we sit here right now in Waterbury, just up the street from us at Thatcherbrook Primary School, the town meeting is ongoing right now for the town of Waterbury. And in many towns that have these in-person meetings, there's a list on their warning of the different organizations that the town would support with donations.
Let's talk about that a little bit more after the break. We need to go to some bottom of the hour CBS news and a couple words from our sponsors. We'll be back and continue our conversation with Lisa Scalotti and Richard Watts in just a couple minutes, folks.
As the winter rolls on, we're on sale upstairs at the Warren Store. All fall winter clothing is 20 and 25% off. Cozy tops, comfy bottoms, warm coats and jackets for men and women. Cool, Prana, Smartwool, Save the Duck, Kari Tra long underwear. Need a hat? We have Skeeta, Shukas, Papia, and more. Palms and beanies galore. And a large selection of socks from fun to functional, blue cute to darn tough. Spring clothing is arriving, so come on down for the best one-stop shopping in Vermont. The almost world-famous Warren Store, Main Street, Warren Village.
News Radio, WDEV, FM, and AM. Now back to the Dave Graham Show.
We're back. My guests are Richard Watts and Lisa Scalotti. They are with the Center for Research on Vermont at the University of Vermont. Then they have something called the Community News Service, wherein students from the University of Vermont are actually out going to town meetings today. And last night, apparently, a couple went to the Hinesburg meeting. And we're hoping that we will get a couple of calls from some of these students. That was part of their assignment I gave them to call into the Dave Graham Show this morning. And now I'm hearing from these two teachers here from the University of Vermont. Well, they're kind of shocked. And I'm thinking, oh, come on, guys. Come on. Get out there and do your civic duty. Call the Dave Graham Show here at 244-1777. Fill us in on what's been going on at town meetings around Vermont. And some of these young folks are going to their first meetings, their first time meetings. They may be from other parts of the country or whatever, just students at the University of Vermont learning about this Vermont tradition in democracy, and it really is. It is something that's something to see. There's a special flavor of a lot of the town meetings. Richard, you were saying that the town of Belvidere, that's way up in Lamoille County, a tiny little place. I guess it's near metropolitan Waterville, if I recall. town of Belvidere has been rated as the most democratic by virtue of the percentage of voters who come to the meeting and the percentage of voters there who speak. Now, one question I have about speaking at town meeting, when I first came to Vermont and first went to my town meetings, I was living in Plainfield. This is way back in the 1980s. And somebody told me that if you have lived in Vermont for 10 years, you can get up and speak at town meeting, and that after 15 years, somebody might listen to you. Is that your understanding as well, or what do you know about that?
You know, actually, if you're a registered voter in town meeting, you can stand up and speak at any time. And one of the great things about town meeting is that many people do speak. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a meeting can go anywhere from 2 to 7 hours. Famously, our students covered Richmond last year, and there was a motion to cut the police budget in half. That was a three or four hour debate, I think they reported. And at the end of the day, it didn't happen. But that's the thing about democracy. It's messy. You don't know. And this is a chance for people to kind of have these conversations. Over time, Frank Bryan found that smaller towns tend to be more democratic. Larger towns, over time, less people have been attending. Over time, one of the things that's undercut town meeting is moving issues to the Australian ballot, so there's less reason to go to a informational public meeting. And what we've tried to do and what Lisa's doing really well here is we're actually sending students to the smaller towns where there really still is this long couple-hour meeting or so where they're actually debating and discussing all these things that they can vote on that are going to have big impacts on their town.
And another thing, too, that happens at town meeting is in terms of, like, the people speaking and participating is that town meeting is there's the business to be done, but then there's also the opportunity to have this gathering of all these people in the community that the town officials and the people in different organizations use it as a way to celebrate their communities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll see there's the lunches. There's also often like tables with Girl Scouts selling their cookies and people with presentations about projects. And it's kind of a way at this time of year for people to kind of come out of their hibernation and they see their neighbors and they find out what's going on and they connect. And it's really sort of an experiment in just people getting together and connecting and doing the work of living in a little town in Vermont.
What town, Lisa, in your experience as a reporter back in the day for the Free Press and just now in your role as coaching people going to town meetings, what do we know about which town has the best lunch?
I think Central Vermont towns actually do more of the lunch thing than the Chittenden County towns do. Mm. I've heard of potlucks and places like that. I never actually got to cover a meeting that had a good lunch, to be perfectly honest. There are the Shelburne town meeting where I'd been working for the Shelburne News for the last couple of years and covered a couple of their town meetings. They do a dinner the night. Their meeting is the night before town meeting day, and they do a sit-down dinner in the school cafeteria. And the town officials, the fire department, there's people from the town that actually will serve the dinner. Their legislators come in, they mingle, they talk to people, and this is all sort of pre-town meeting convening. So everyone's fed and they're all fortified to then go in and spend several hours of their evening discussing town business.
That's great. You got to be well fed and ready to rumble. When you go into town meeting, I remember when I was a reporter for the AP going to a couple meetings up in the Northeast Kingdom. And I remember, in some places it's remarkable the degree to which it really feels like a family reunion, in part because in some towns, you'll have members of the same family who are on the select board, on the school board, the town clerk, the constable, and on, it'll be the same last name. It's just kind of hilarious in some of our communities. And then the other thing that would happen would be at lunchtime, you'd hear just the chatter in the kitchen about everybody sort of knew who was bringing which dish. Because it was like, your Thanksgiving family gathering where, Aunt B always brings green beans almondine or whatever, and sure enough, there would be you know, somebody who would be relied upon to have a certain kind of pie that she made every year and that people really loved. And that's part of the joy, I think, in the tradition of that community family reunion kind of an atmosphere in some town meetings.
One thing that Frank Bryan, the scholar, used to talk about is forced civility. He saw town meetings as a place where we wanted to get together, we wanted to be with each other, but there was a civility that had to come with talking to your neighbors face to face. And one thing he really hated, and that is, we've seen this around the country, is politicians have taken on the concept of town meeting with their town hall meetings. Mm-hmm. So you'll see people, famously Jimmy Carter was first, hosting town hall meetings, which are really nothing like an actual town meeting, because at town meeting, everyone who walks in there is a legislator. You can actually change the budget from the floor. You have total authority, whereas a town hall meeting, of course, is a political leader talking and taking comments. But the essence of town meeting, why it's considered so democratic, is everybody in that room is a legislator. Everybody has the ability to vote on and change items from the floor.
That is a key thing that actually, and I think that there is a sense of the absence of alienation, I guess. Alienation is when people feel disconnected from their political processes. And of course, we have this in the nationwide political scene. Something like half of the population doesn't even bother to go to the polls because they feel like they're so disconnected from any sense of having a real say in what goes on in the country. Town meeting is the perfect antidote to that, I think, because as you put it, Richard, you are a legislator when you show up there. You are your vote counts as much as anybody else's in the room in terms of whether, you know, the firehouse really needs that new roof this year.
And there's an accountability that happens when you get all these people together. You know, at the town meeting, you'll have the select board sitting there. People have their town reports with the budget printed in them.
Mm-hmm.
And they get up and they ask questions. And there's a lot to be said for looking your select board members in the eye and saying, you know, explain this to me. And they give presentations and they sort of talk about the process that they went through to come up with what they came up with. And they have to account to the people in front of them. And a lot of great conversations come of that. Most of the time, there isn't a lot of questioning, but there is a lot of back and forth. And there's no other level of government that you're able to sort of have that kind of interaction face to face like that.
One of the things that I was talking with Governor Jim Douglas about earlier, the first part of the show, he was on, and I wanted him on today in particular because of his long experience, 33 years as the moderator of the Middlebury Town Meeting. And the way that town meeting has changed, and Richard, you alluded to this, the changes in town meeting and really the diminishment in many areas of town meeting over time. And a lot of this is just stems from economic changes, doesn't it? In the sense that there are a lot fewer towns now where the majority of residents both live and work within the town borders. Most people are working out of town somewhere these days. Is that what you find in your research?
A couple of things have happened. One is that over time we have taken away some of the decision making that was allowed at the town level. So by moving items to the Australian ballot, basically we're saying don't bother to go to town meeting because there's nothing that you're voting on that makes any difference. Larger towns have done that in a way to address what you're saying, that they feel like less people may be coming to town meeting. And the other thing that we've done, by moving the school votes out of the town meeting, we've undercut again town meeting by saying that the school vote is going to happen separately on Australian ballots. So something that used to bring people to town meeting has gone away. Some towns have gone to informational meetings. Nobody goes to that. Why would you go? Because there's nothing you're going to vote on that makes any difference. Smaller towns, it's still continue the tradition, still continue to vote on the highway budget and school budget and important things that make a difference in the town. But larger towns have moved away from that.
The school changes, the Act 46, for instance, which is further regionalized our school systems. Somebody was telling me in the last couple of days that they fear that is going to hurt town meeting further and give people less of a reason to go to their local meetings. Are you seeing any sign of that so far, either Lisa or Richard, on this one?
Well, I'm not so sure how that's going to pan out that way. I mean, the decision-making is still being done by voters, although with the consolidation of school districts, where there may have been union school districts before for high schools, a lot of the schools in the districts had individual school boards for their elementary level schools. So there was a lot more voting that happened, and decision making was sort of spread out more. And now it's all being done by one board and one ballot. So people really need to pay attention. And that's the challenge, I think, because a lot of folks aren't paying as close attention and going to these informational meetings to know. So it's getting a little further away from the voters that are making the decisions.
That is interesting that on that kind of sliding scale of immediate voter participation and accountability and accessibility to power, essentially, we are getting a little bit more away from that in this age of school reorganization, are we not?
It's a trade-off, because there used to be, like in our school district here, we had a school board for our high school, and then every elementary school had its own board. Just mm-hmm. the number of people that the voters were able to elect to represent them on school boards has diminished drastically, because all those little school boards have now been wiped out and consolidated into one large board.
On a more positive note, because mm-hmm. yes, town meeting is under assault from many directions for many reasons, including socio-demographic changes. But when it comes just to the voting, which is the simplest thing that you can do, Vermont has some of the best voting laws in the country. I think we might be number one or number two. People may not realize this, but you can actually register to vote on the same day that you vote.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that the easier you make it for people to vote, the more likely they are to vote. The harder you make it to vote, the less likely they are to vote. And, you know, Vermont should be proud of what we've done here to really open up that part of the democratic process to as many people as possible.
Big shout out to Secretary of State Jim Condos. This is really one of his big things. And there are so many aspects of our voter laws that people really have little excuse not to vote or to miss voting. One of the great features that's come about in recent years is the ability for people to register to vote before they're 18. Mm-hmm. So if on an election year you're 17 years old and you're turning 18 by the general election, you could be voting today in the presidential primary, in your town elections, as long as your birthday is going to happen before the general election. So, you know, as far as like access and getting people involved as soon as possible, it's really an open system. And we have a lot of provisions like that so that people don't feel as if they're left out.
The one thing that I'm hearing about early voting is that there is a little bit of a downside that's just become apparent to folks in the last couple of days, really, in the presidential primaries in some places, including, I would imagine, in Vermont, people may have gone in, let's say, this past Saturday. A lot of towns had their polling places open on Saturday, and that seemed like a nice thing to for folks who would be, you know, figure, oh, I'm going to be working full-time on Tuesday, and it's a little tough to get to the polls after work. I got to go home and make supper or whatever. So I'll go vote on Saturday, and if anybody went and voted on Saturday for Pete Buttigieg or Amy Klobuchar, they may have a little bit of buyer's remorse today, given that Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar just dropped out of the presidential contest in the last couple of days. So, I mean, that is an issue, and of course, there's no do-overs in voting either. You don't get to go back and say, wait a minute, let me have my ballot back. I'm going to pick somebody else.
It is an argument, though, is it IRB, ICV, you know, where you pick your one, two, three choices, and so if one is gone, you get your two.
That's a good point, I suppose. Yeah, the ranked choice voting, as some people call it, or instant runoff voting, where you say which one is your favorite, your second favorite, your third favorite, and if your first favorite either falters or loses or disappears or whatever, I guess your vote would go to the second favorite candidate you've chosen. So that's an interesting. I'm glad you mentioned that.
Richard, that would come in handy this year.
This year in the presidential primary, I would think. In fact, I've heard this mentioned a couple times in some of the coverage and commentary I've seen on the primaries that this would be a place where it would make sense to try ranked choice or instant runoff voting. And so who knows? Maybe it'll happen one of these days, but not this year. So Richard Watts and Lisa Scalotti are my guests here. They are both with the Center for Research on Vermont at the University of Vermont. They are leading a team of students who are fanning out across the state today. How many students overall are doing this, Lisa?
I've got 10, and they're working for the Free Press and the Hinesburg Record. Mm-hmm. And we're even helping out the Associated Press with collecting some presidential primary results in some precincts, too.
And, of course, it's a labor-intensive job to cover with any degree of real thoroughness a local election series of town meetings, whatever the case may be. And of course, you mentioned, Lisa, that back in your early days at the Free Press and starting in 1987, you were part of a team of reporters who could fan out across Chittenden County and get local results and so on and so forth. Now we're doing it with students. What's going on in the media?
Well, we are. We used to do it with students then, too. And I think one of the things that's changed, I think, is sort of where the coverage is happening. And mm-hmm. newspapers especially have kind of been a little slow to get this momentum going. But back then, the Free Press used to cover 10 of Vermont's 14 counties. And we would have an army of student volunteers from St. Michael's College that would come in. And there wasn't the internet to get results. And town clerks would have to call in mm-hmm. with their results. And we would have copy that was prepared beforehand, little stories written up that we'd had to fill in the results. We were organized by county. We had a switchboard operator. It was very efficient, but it was very labor intensive.
Yeah.
But, you know, fast forward to where we are now, we've got students helping us in other ways. But I'd love to give a shout out to the news organizations that are out there today. There are reporters at a lot of different Vermont news organizations, whether they're producing print results tomorrow or not. The folks at the Free Press are doing their job trying to cover Chittenden County. The folks at Vermont Digger have done a really nice election guide, especially in Burlington, and they're going to be working all day and blogging and getting results in tonight. The folks at VPR, you know, there's a lot of news gathering happening. You know, the Secretary of State's office puts out a tremendous amount of information on every election night that every reporter is tuned into. If you go to the Secretary of State's website tonight, anybody can tune in and watch the results as they get recorded and put up on the website. And that's really exciting to see. And so there's other formats now. You're going to see these reporters putting their news on their websites, on their Twitter feeds mm-hmm. To keep up. You guys are going to be here tonight with people calling in and filling you in and keeping you updated. So,
And some of those journalists active are going to be calling into WDEV this evening. We have, as I mentioned earlier, Steve Pappas from the Times Argus, Tommy Gardner from the Stowe Reporter, Tom Brown from the Montpelier Bridge, John Flowers from the Addison Independent, and Mike Donahue from Everywhere is going to be joining us. These folks are going to be joining us for intermittently for phone call interviews with our WDEV team, including Lee Cattell, Joel Najman, and Dylan Deloge this evening for our coverage of the. You put it together. You make it work, and you get as much news out there as you possibly could gather and relay to the folks who are trying to follow it and stay up and stay up on things. And that is the that's how it works. That's the deal.
And from a big picture perspective, it matters. It matters so much to have local news. And we know that people are more likely to be engaged in their local community. If there's a local newspaper, they're more likely to trust the media if they know the reporter. They're more likely to participate in local things if they're able to read about it. But this has been just decimated in this country. Partly to blame is Google and Facebook, which have together sucked up about 85% of the ad revenues that used to go to local community papers.
Mm-hmm.
And we now have things called media deserts, places where there is no local news at all. Vermont is doing better than other places because people are so willing to support their local press, but it makes a difference on so many levels. So I agree with Lisa. Shout out to all the people who are keeping this going.
And for the community news organizations, too, if you're in a town where you've got a weekly newspaper, biweekly, or bimonthly, or a monthly newspaper, a lot of them come to you free. They're distributed free in your communities. But that doesn't mean that they don't need the economic support. So notice who those advertisers are and support the people that are supporting those papers, because that's what keeps them coming out every week.
And when you get your car serviced at the local garage, mention their ad that they ran in the local
exactly.
weekly or whatever. And hey, thanks for doing that. And here's some business for you. Please change my tires or whatever. Now I'm wondering if you guys are also What are you hearing from some of your students? Apparently, they're just too shy to call in. We got just a few minutes left to go, and I got to ask you, how much are they going to be graded down for their failure to call the Dave Graham Show this morning?
I'm wondering if there's going to be some exciting tales from the road today. Who knows? Maybe they're stuck in the mud somewhere as it's getting warm outside and the roads are melting. And
all right,
there could be some logistical challenges.
The dog
too.
Ate their homework. You're already making up excuses. I can tell you're too easy.
Self-service. I don't know.
Yeah, you got to be cracking
the
whip.
That is one
here.
Of my favorite stories. Though, sent students to a town meeting and they called me, and you're always terrified of that call, and they're like, the car broke down, but guess what, there's all these people here who are helping us out.
I've actually seen things like that where, you know, somebody's car gets stuck in the mud outside town hall or whatever. You know, again, this is up in the Northeast Kingdom years ago, and suddenly it just appeared all these folks who had been in the meeting came running out and got the car out of the mud. Several of them ended up rather spattered themselves, but in the process, this is Vermont in early March. You know, there's going to be mud. There will be mud. And that is just part of the charm. It's all a beautiful thing. Richard Watts, I'm wondering, your students how do they sort of view town meeting? I was going to ask them this, but I mean, are you hearing from them that they think this is a really important thing that it needs to be preserved and enhanced, or are they seeing it as kind of an anachronism and sort of cute and quaint, or what's the general view out there among the young folks who are looking at this?
You know, they, in all honesty, they often come back totally enthused by this, like, conversation. It's so unlike their experiences, which most of them are from big suburbs, you know, outside of Boston or outside of D.C., and there's just not this kind of local gathering taking place in any way. So they often come back enthusiastic, whether that means they would go to town meeting year after year, I don't know, but that first experience with it often is quite interesting and exciting to them. And it, you know, if you're sort of dropped in from another world and all your experiences with community gatherings are like the mall, and then suddenly you're in this place where people are debating whether or not to put salt on the road, or whether or not to pave, you know, Pond Road, or whether or not to add $2,000 for the Hinesburg Community Resource Center because of this and that and this and that. And then people take it quite, you know, seriously. There's different arguments made on both sides, and then there's a vote, and people have to stand up. It can be quite an unusual experience for students from, you know, generally very different types of places. Two-thirds or so of our students now don't come from Vermont and haven't really seen or experienced things like this.
Mm-hmm. Lisa, what are you hearing from students, the folks you are talking to about going out to town meetings? Are they excited to go and cover, you know, whether we buy a new grader or not?
I think so. You know, I think that they're excited to get off campus. And that's one of the real points of this whole program, is to get them out in the communities and to go to a town meeting, even if they're just going into a town today where there's not a meeting happening, but there's just balloting.
Yep.
It's a snapshot of what the Vermont landscape is like.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to see people. They're going to see people. You might see the older kids in the community babysitting the babies while their parents are over at town meeting. You're going to see Girl Scouts selling cookies and people talking about the bike trail project that's coming up. And they're going to get to see what goes on in the community all in one place. And I think that's a really good use of their time, to get out for a day like that and get a sense of it that you wouldn't see if you're just spending all of your time in Burlington. I'm really eager to hear their stories when they get back today.
Excellent. Well, I'm sure you'll hear some good ones. Richard Watts and Lisa Scalotti have been my guests. They are with the Center for Research on Vermont, the University of Vermont, and the Community News Service. And they have very, very kindly shared some of their time with us this morning as they get ready to coach these students marching out into our hills and valleys of Vermont to go to town meeting. And thank you so much, Lisa and Richard, for coming in this morning.
So if people see them, please talk to them. If they're looking to do interviews and you run across any of these eager young reporters out there, be sure to give them a minute of your time and do a little interview.
That's a very good thought. Don't just brush them off because you think they're the evil media or something. So, all righty. Well, that's going to about do it for today's Dave Graham Show on WDEV FM and AM. And I really appreciate all the listeners who've been checking us out all this time, and stay with us every morning from 9:05 to about 11 o'clock, and we will be back tomorrow with another edition of our show. Stay tuned now for Bill Sayre, Common Sense Radio. And don't forget WDEV special town meeting coverage tonight starting around 8:30 with all of our far-flung reporters out there getting us good words about what's going on. Have a great day, everybody.